discusses storytelling from all angles to help you and us answer the call for the muse scream, tell the damn story. We'll be exploring the challenges of being creative in fiction, illustration, comics, film, and nonfiction.
We're back. That's right.
Yay.
Yeah, we're what's back. Yeah. Seems like only yesterday. Actually, it wasn't. Here we are. And you got your blackjack mug. Yes. Hey, well, wait a minute. Hold it. Yeah. I got mine here. Let me just share the screen. There's clink. Mine. And there's clink. And then there's Chris. Yeah, clink. There we go. Okay, blackjack right. Rules. And at some point we'll do something about him too. But you know, yeah. This episode,
if viewers want that blackjack mug, you got to haunt Alex.
Yeah. This episode is actually about something that Chris wrote that I enjoyed. I enjoyed hearing him talk about it. I enjoyed hearing him talk about the process in creating it. And there's some interesting material as in even in the aspect of why or aspects of why he created it, what's behind the story. And so I thought we would take this episode to actually delve into the mind of Chris Ryan, what a scary thought, and talk to him about a book that he wrote and that you released, I believe it was last summer, called Genius High.
Yes.
So, Chris, here we are, and there you are, and you must have a copy of the book. By the way, back up. It's too close. There we go. That's nice. Got a little bit of Genius High. You can go back even a little further. We'll see the whole book. Go back a little bit more. Stop right there. There. Now we can see the whole book. There we go. Genius High. So before... Oh, God, he's smiling. So before we go any further with the behind the scenes, the in-depth, the what the heck is Genius High? What's the book about?
Okay, well, in my alter ego, daytime, I am mild-mannered high school teacher at Hackensack High School. And over the last few years, students have been assaulted, I guess I would say, with high-stakes testing. And there's so many tests, just an endless amount of tests, in-class tests, assessment tests, pre-assessment, post-assessment, reading tests, park tests. It's just, you know, and it's across the country. It's not just Hackensack. And, you know, these are all state-mandated tests. And the pressure about these tests and how much they impact how a teacher is assessed, how a child is assessed, how a school is assessed, how funding is determined, all sorts of stuff. It just really felt horrifying to me, you know, and for me it was just one or two steps further and I got to the book. The idea of Genius High is the idea of a school system, not Hackensack. Hackensack's a beautiful place where, you know, we work to the best of our abilities to bring the best out of students, but you know, an American high school, okay, where the pressure to succeed, the pressure to do well on tests is so big that when a shadowy company comes and offers the powers to be in that school district the ability to make sure that all of the students improve, that all of their IQs rise, that's too much of a temptation. And without the students knowing, they accept. And something is introduced into the atmosphere of that particular high school that raises everybody's IQ. Thus the name Genius High. If you were to raise everybody's IQ, the reactions to that would be as varied as the reactions you have, the attitudes you have, the ability to cope you have in any high school in America. And that is really, that was the foundation of the story, what happens. And of course, nothing is 100%, so there are a few who find themselves oddly unaffected And that thus begins the mystery, where a group of friends, and that's Reckless Eric and Lily and Jack, and Jack's troubled sister Sid, and a character I'm really proud of named Stevie, and the one and only Ignatius Bob.
Ignatius Bob.
They kind of join together. Yeah, we'll talk about that name. They join together to try and figure out what's going on with as I say in the back of the book, the mentally mutating classmates, the love triangles they face, and who these mysterious forces are that are working against them at every turn. And they face corruption. People try to frame them. They get in very, very real danger while they're trying to uncover the truth. I thought it was a pretty strong metaphor, a pretty strong parody of the testing craze, or the, you know, insanity, but also a metaphor for what I've watched in high schools for 20 years, students searching for themselves and who they are, and how they find out who they are, learn who they are throughout this experience.
Now you said that you named some of the characters that are key to trying to unravel the mystery of what's going on. And you've been a high school teacher for a number of years. So the characters, are we talking middle America with suburban, urban? What kind of characters are we talking about?
A suburban, working class suburban community, made up the name, the architecture of the school. Parts of it is based on the high school I went to in the Bronx, Cardinal Spellman, and parts of it are based on other schools that I've either visited or some, you know, there's a football field. Hackensack has a football field, so, you know, it is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. But I wanted it to be any town high school as opposed to, you know, limiting who could relate to it.
And when you say that, again, are we talking, because, you know, you asked the question, are we talking predominantly white, or white, black, or Latino, or Asian, or... What's the mix in that respect?
It's pretty mixed. Reckless Eric, Lily and Jack, and Jack's sister Sid are fairly white. You might say Lily is Lily White. Thank you.
Oh, but I'm bumps.
Ignatius Bob is an African-American kid. Tall boy. Tall guy. Oh, my God. And he... sounds like his name.
Okay.
And he was partly based on a student I had who's now a colleague of mine who teaches alongside me, and partly based on this kid that came through the school not too long ago. If he ever watches this, he'll hopefully be thrilled. But here's a kid who came to the school in his, I think it was his senior year. He didn't have any time to make friends. He walked around the school playing a banjo.
Wow.
And big kid, just very unique hair, and very intelligent, and he seemed like an old soul. The colleague of mine who I've taught at one point, he's an old soul, so Ignatius Bob has that kind of feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Stevie. Well, I guess, do you want to talk about Ignatius Bob's name while we're at it?
Your call. Go ahead.
Okay. It's a shout-out to the Bronx. When we were kids, the closest cemetery was St. Raymond Cemetery. And if, you know, if you're on the outside of that gated cemetery, in the southernmost corner, and you walk along there, you will see a headstone bearing the name Ignatius Bob. And very much like the Beatles with Eleanor Rigby, that name stuck with me. I thought it was the greatest name I had ever seen. That clearly belonged to a real person at one point. And I mean, I first probably saw it when I was maybe 14.
Yeah.
And I've carried that name around since then, wanting a character that would pay tribute to this great name. I never knew the history of who that person was, and when this character started coming up as a necessary character to tell the tale, I realized he was Ignatius Bomb. So that's where that story, that's where that name comes from, Ignatius Bomb. There is one other character in here that we were talking about, and that's Stevie. And I'm proud of Stevie. Stevie is a transitioning transgender student. She identifies as female, and she was born entirely out of an experience I had observing a student at Hackensack. Hackensack is an amazingly accepting place. And it is incredibly diverse. We have everybody. Everyone is represented in this school.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, we have a transgender student. There was one a few years ago who was gloriously at home in her transition and marched around the school either in regular clothes, you know, whether it's a dress or whatever, or jeans and whatever, depending on her mood, or outrageous boots and whatever. Fantastic. Just very confident. And then there's this other kid. I never had this kid in my class. I never had either in my class, to tell you the truth. But this one I would see all the time. I had a hallway duty that outside the art classes, and he was an artist. He transitioning into a she slowly.
Mm-hmm.
This person walked pressed against the wall, shoulders slumped. It was the most painful walk I had ever seen. And hard to look people in the eye, and would try things, you know, there would be a long shirt that could be conceived as a dress over jeans, or tights over a very masculine shirt, you know, back and forth. It was just the struggle was so palpable and so visual, and you know, they grow out one side of the hair, but the other side of the hair was short, and it was so clear this person was in pain, and then disappeared from the school. I didn't have a student. I didn't have a name to ask what happened to the student. I didn't know. I didn't know which kids knew this kid. And I wanted to try and create a character that a person like this student who was in pain could read and find hope in.
Mm.
And that's where Stevie came from. Stevie's I really am proud of her creation or her existence.
You said that a couple of times. What do you mean proud? What makes you proud?
Because I thought about creating that character because I felt that kid's pain. Not literally. I'm in a different place in my life. A different, you know, whatever he's turning into, what he wants to be. What she wants to be, I'm not sure exactly. I do have one more coda for that story, but I have lost touch since then.
Stay tuned for the second half of our interview with Chris Ryan on his book, Genius High.